For the challenger, Big Daddy Cool Diesel, the proverbial glass is half full. His reign as WWF champion ended last November. But in the aftermath, he has launched a crusade of reckless abandon in the World Wrestling Federation. Now, this rebellious malcontent finds himself in a position to reclaim championship gold in a no-holds-barred match that favors a man of his size. For the champion, Shawn Michaels, the glass is half empty. He fulfilled a boyhood dream at WrestleMania, but lost a close friend on the road to the championship. Tonight, in what will surely be the most emotional match of his career, he not only yields a distinct physical advantage to the 7-foot Diesel, but a psychological one as well. Can David slay Goliath? Or will Shawn Michaels' reign as leader of the new generation come to an abrupt end? Tonight, only one thing's for sure. When it's over, these two friends turn better enemies, will hate each other even more than before.
April 28, 1996, Oasis has taken over North America. The number one movie in the land is The Quest, starring Jean-Claude Van Damme, who enters a martial arts tournament in the mysterious Lost City in Tibet. And Shock Jock, Howard Stern's radio show, is debuting all across the West Coast. We are the Federation Podcast. I'm Tyler Fudge.
And I'm Travis Fudge.
This episode is number 145, WWF In Your House number 7, Good Friends, Better Enemies from, was this, May 19th?
April.
April?
This would be April 27th. April 28th.
April 28th. May 19th is the next WCW show. So, WCW Slamboree. But this is in 1996. But you can follow us on Twitter, at the Federation. Travis at...
Fudging up 333.
And if you retweet the pinned tweet on the Federation's page, you get a shout out on the show, just like Juan Cena, Sat Pod, Viva La JD, Johnny Utah, Off the Ropes Wrestling, Casey Jerombeck, Dallas Ellingsworth, Bobby Anthem, Lucha Krusty, Fat Superman, Jay Dune, Tara Goldsmith, and SCL, Suplex City Limits. You can find me on every weekend talking modern day wrestling. You can also get us on Facebook, the Federation Podcast. Buy t-shirts at whatamaneuver.net. And you can be a member of the Patreon page where you get... What was the episode you put up earlier?
Well, I did a double shot this past week with Federation on Shuffle covering the go-home show for this pay-per-view that we're talking about today.
Yes.
Which would be the April 22nd, 1996 Monday Night Raw. As well as the Let's Talk About NXT, it was a pretty bumping episode with the whole heel turn, Johnny Gargano.
Oh, yes, yes. But if you become a member on our Patreon page, you get good stuff like that and more. Just like Ty Loney, Dallas Ellingsworth, Chris Savage, Christopher Spaulding, and Viva La JD, who just donated money to become the biggest money mark of them all, just like Mitch Woolridge, who will be... We'll be doing a little bit different, though. Instead of him coming over to our show to do a show, he wants us to come over on his show and do a show. And we'll be covering, Travis, Royal Rumble 2008.
MSG.
MSG, whatever. I've never seen that show.
It's a better show from 08.
Is it?
Yeah.
There you go. So we'll be doing that. So, Travis, have you been up to anything since... Since we last convened for WCW Uncensored 1996.
Red Dead Redemption.
Yeah, I played a lot of it yesterday and this afternoon. My eyes hurt.
And we both ended up at the same place.
We did. We both ended up. Yeah, yeah. I played a lot of catch up. I played until like 2:30 in the morning. And it was fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it was.
I'm not very far. I'm probably like 4 hours, 5 hours in.
It was the same here, yeah.
So... You know, no revolution. I'm no I'm no fucking wild man yet.
The Federation,
but I do feel like a true Albertan playing that game.
Yeah, the Federation's over here. We're not huge gamers.
No,
we're not fucking grinding all hours of the day.
But I'm sure there's a pocket of German people who like to game tremendously.
Is this a segue?
This is a segue to a German tour that the WWF did in April of 1996. Most of the crew went over to Germany. They did some Bret Hart interviews late in the week, which aired on Raw. Mm-hmm. Bret Hart would not come back, though, for months and months because he's taking some time off to let Shawn Michaels become the number one guy. But this is his way of trying to step back and be like, hey, you know, can't say I never tried, right? Can't say I got in the way in these 6 months of you trying to make him the guy.
In that interview, it main evented a Raw. And
yeah, it didn't get a great rating either.
Oh, I'm not surprised, because all it talked about was how he felt betrayed that he lost the title and he's not going to come back.
Yes. And there was an interview of him talking about guys who are leaving are being greedy, which we all know what that is ending up with. You know, it's Razor Ramon and Diesel. Goldust blew out his knee on April 13th in Dusseldorf, Germany. That's why he's wearing the tape brace on this show here as well. He hurt his knee against Razor Ramon. He would then miss the next show, where they had Kid take on Razor Ramon. But then, you also get a bunch of guys, you know, you got a bunch of wrestlers together for 17 days on a tour. You're bound to have some shit go down, where Diesel and Razor were, breaking all the company rules, every last one of them, because, I mean, they're leaving. What are they going to do? You know, they suspended Razor Ramon for 6 weeks. It came the day he gave his notice, and they called it a wellness policy or whatever, a steroid or something, right? Just a suspension.
That makes sense, because he is not on a single Raw after Mania.
No, he's not even on Mania. He was supposed to be in that backlot brawl match against Goldust.
Yes, he was.
So,
and yeah, it's so weird that they're setting up this match with him and Vader later on in the night, and there's no build-up.
No build. Let's see here. Everybody wanted to hit Shawn Michaels because he's just being Shawn Michaels, but nobody can do it because they know that if they do it, they're out of a job because it's Shawn fucking Michaels. Let's see, Sunny left the tour early because she was ribbed to death. She's just done with it. Chris, I'm gonna sneeze. I've been fighting off a sneeze for like 5 minutes, but it's I'm fighting it down. It's going to stay down. Chris Candido was also being ribbed relentlessly on the tour, and he's just sucking it up and being a man. But Sonny, I mean, I'm sure she probably ate some shit. You know, somebody, you know, there's also a three-way apparently rumored that's why she left, because that got out of hand and people found out. Just Sonny being Sonny. But one thing I got to ask, it's a much hotter Sonny than Sonny of today.
My God, what a specimen.
Sure. Yes. She's one to look at. What was 1995? She was the most downloaded woman of the year.
95 or 96?
I think it was at least. I don't know, because I just remember Cindy Margolis becoming the.
She wasn't around for very much in 95, so I'm thinking 96.
Could be 1996. I mean, AOL is all the rage at this point in time.
And CompuServe.
Yes, I forgot. There was a difference between the two, and one WCW and one WWF. Yeah. One would win and one would not. Obviously, AOL would switch and jump over to WCW when they bought it.
Time Warner merger.
Yeah. Let's see here what else happened on this German tour. Bret Hart got fed up with everything that happened, and there was a rumor going around that once he leaves this, that he's never going to come back. But, I mean, that would prove to be very untrue. But nonetheless, that was the news from the German tour. The German tour.
Oh,
yes.
Guten Tag.
Guten Tag. Travis, you got any German memories?
Well, on the Raws leading up to this, they were advertising our opening match, the tag match, to be just Jake Roberts taking on Bulldog. Because
yes.
Jake Roberts ended up, I think, almost defeating Owen Hart on one of the Germany tours, but British Bulldog interrupted it. Caused the schmoz, and it was a big hyped moment for one of the Raws leading up to this pay-per-view. What happened on the German tour between Bulldog and Jake Roberts? And it's just so fucking anticlimactic, because all it is Bulldog attacks him, but then, by God, Bulldog's afraid of snakes. So he gets wrapped up in the snake, and then that's the build-up for this entire match. Yes. And then, sure shit, we don't even fucking get the match.
Well, I mean, we get the tag match.
They don't advertise that tag match at all. It's Jake Roberts versus Bulldog up until tonight.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, it changes that abruptly.
Yeah.
Well, let's see. It was made into a tag match because Davey Boy Smith's knee is fucked.
And he's main eventing the next show.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
So they had to put Owen on the show to save the match.
And he did.
Where, yes. That's where Ahmed Johnson come in and just look like a fool. But that is, let's see, since you were talking about British Bulldog, we might as well get into some of the news here. Because he is a part of one of the sleaziest moves that WWF has done up to date. On the April 15th Raw, they did a 1-900-line tease that said, if you call, you can find out what Davey Boy Smith and Magic Johnson have in common besides both being professional athletes. Do you know what was the first thing that came to everybody's mind?
HIV?
HIV.
What the fuck?
Yes. And if you're wondering what they have in common, according to the hotline, both had altercations with referees that week.
What the what?
Yep. That's,
that is disgusting.
That pulls them in the line of,
what the fuck?
WWF.
Yeah.
Changing it up a little bit. It's not what the fuck WCW, it's what the fuck WWF. But, that's the first little bit of news. Bret Hart also had a kayfabe column in the Calgary Sun where he talked about where he's going to go from here is undetermined. You know, he's considering ending his illustrious career. You know, and to end it being a four-time WWF champ has a compelling ring to it. So, you know, it's Bret Hart pumping his own brakes, right? He throws a little bit of shade people's way by saying that a warrior will fade fast, especially if he's leaned on for anything more than throwing clotheslines and shaking the ropes. But hey, he looks great.
Well, Brett was kind of a prognosticator because yep. Warrior does not last long.
He does not. No, he definitely does not. Vader broke his eardrum in a match against Yokozuna. But he made it back for this pay-per-view, obviously. Maybe that's why his mask is so goddamn loose.
Yeah, it was pretty loose.
It was not in the face, though. The noses.
Oh, that nose is tightly tucked in.
It is. It's tightly squished in. A gay rights group got a major story in the Stanford Advocate critical of the Goldust character. They were mad at the message that it portrayed gay people as predatory homosexuals as Goldust portrayed. And this is after... Like, he's essentially because he threatens straight men and he tries to beat them up if they won't kiss him kind of deal. So, like, people are a little upset about it, which, I mean, I don't understand it.
I can get where they're coming from. Yeah.
Yeah, but, I mean, his wife is there on the show with him.
Exactly, Marlene. You know. Like,
so, like, he's not technically, he might be bi. The character might be bi. I mean, whatever. I mean, if you want to, go for it. Glad claimed that they had 50 to 100 people protest the WWF show. And WWF did not respond, and they claimed that they will continue protest until WWF turns Goldust into a character not offensive to gays.
So, well, you know, they protested for a year. So,
yeah, I mean, you give that a little bit more than a year, then he would go right the other way again when he was with Luna and being with the dog.
He becomes like a very, very PC Goldust for about 4 months.
Yeah.
And then when Pillman dies, they got to change all the plans. And fucking Goldust becomes the artist formerly known as Goldust.
Yes. And then becomes Seven and Goldust again. The Billionaire Ted vignettes have been airing. Did you see a bunch of those doing your Raws?
No.
Well, this is probably just leading up before WrestleMania. But, you got the Huckster, the Nacho Man on the Scheme Gene on the Larry Fling show, and blah blah blah. You know, and when you look at that now, and then the WWE of today, it's like you're making fun of yourselves 20 years later.
Yeah.
Essentially is what you're doing.
Absolutely.
And it blows your mind just to see this is the cusp of WWF doing its best money of all time. They're just on the cusp of breaking into that. And they're bucking the system against the old folks. And now they're that exact same company.
Yeah, yeah. That's all they've relied on for the last few years.
And it's all they will rely on.
Every Mania is a nostalgic act. Yeah. You can't main event a Mania anymore with a homegrown
unless
star.
You're an attitude star. That's about it.
Yeah.
And speaking of Mania, with all the injuries going on around WrestleMania and before WrestleMania, this caused a guy named Cactus Jack, who was contacted to go on the road as Mankind before Mania, to come in early. And so that's what, remember when I was saying Cactus Jack hasn't debuted yet? And you're like, oh, no, he's been there. So this is why. All the injuries caused Mankind to be debuted earlier.
Oh.
Than usually, because they were airing the vignettes at this point in time for him to come back after Mania. And
his TV debut is the Raw after Mania.
The Raw after Mania?
Yeah.
That sounds about right. And then in case you wanted to know, there was a rat named George in an interview that he did. Can you remember this rat?
No, I haven't seen the vignettes.
No, I just remember as a kid. I remember seeing him with a rat. And that rat is a trained pet rat of Jim Cornette's girlfriend.
Ew.
Imagine what she did with that rat.
Ew.
And the last bit of news, Travis, Jim Helwig, who that sounds like a very stout beer.
It's an interesting beer.
Explain it. Paint a picture.
It's let's see. It's called Caravels Hazy Horizon Hefeweizen. It's hazy and very, very sedimentary. A lot of sediment in there.
A lot of rocks in it. Minerals.
Just a lot of wheat.
A lot of zinc.
It's my daily carb intake.
Yeah. No carbs for you for the rest of the day?
No.
No? No. No. Sound pretty happy about that. you know what? The Warrior would approve of less carbs. So much so, Jim Helwig, a.k.a. The Ultimate Warrior, would only let a professional bodybuilder photographer shoot his publicity photos. So, you know, to highlight his strengths and to hide his weaknesses to his physique. Because he's the Ultimate Warrior. There's weaknesses there. It's muscles on top of muscles. There's no way to photograph it wrong.
He does look very good, though.
Yes. So Titan Sports had to bring in the son of Jim Mannion to do his pub photos. The irony here is that Mannion was a bitter enemy of McMahon during the bodybuilding business promotional war that McMahon lost several years back. So, who got the last laugh?
Mannion.
And that is the WWF news.
And I'm pretty sure around this time, too, Warrior's trying to get that comic book.
If he doesn't already have it.
Because of that air duster he's got, man. That's all cartoon photos of Warrior.
It is.
I don't know. Maybe I'm spoiling the news for a couple months later when Warrior leaves, but I think that's a reason why he leaves.
Because he gets the comic book?
And McMahon,
what an illustrious deal that
McMahon
was.
Won't like promote it or anything like that, so Warrior leaves or something like that. We'll find out in a couple months.
That sounds like something Warrior would do, that fucking guy.
I give it by next month.
I can see that.
When we talk about Beware a Dog, I bet
you're right. He's there at King of the Ring, too.
He is?
I'm pretty sure he's at King of the Ring.
Oh, you know what? He might be at International Incident, too. Yeah, because he tags up with Ahmed Johnson and HBK at one point.
There you go.
Yeah, whatever. Okay. Fuck it. Forget
whatever
it.
Whatever that is.
He'll be there for a couple more months.
He'll come somewhere down the line. But Travis, let's get into our first WWF show of this arc.
Yes.
Are you ready?
Let's.
Dropping the bombs on Omaha, Nebraska.
Cornhuskers.
Yep.
Welcome, everyone, to Omaha, Nebraska!
Travis, that was the sultry voice of Vincent Kennedy McMahon, who will grace us with many quips and many growly influences throughout the next hour and 44 minutes.
Like him or not, he's one of my favorite play-by-play commentators of all time. like,
if you want to go that far,
mid to late 90s Vince McMahon, between like 93 to like 97. I love him as a commentator. I don't know why. Maybe it's because I was a kid and I listened to him a lot.
It could be.
But he's just like, because it's his product, he is so goddamn into everything. And yeah, like his whole 1-2, oh, that's it. No.
Well, he knows where everything is going, right?
I know. It's great.
So it works out good.
Like Diesel body slam Shawn Michaels, and you're Vince expects that's the end of the match at one point. He's like, that's got to be it, and I hope so. Nope.
I mean,
he's amazing.
I mean, I can see why he could be exciting. He's not my cup of tea, but I mean, it's better than getting Michael Cole. At least there's some excitement in his voice.
Yeah.
No matter how fake that excitement comes off as sometimes.
Cole has his moments where he's really good though.
Yeah, yeah. But again, like we said, this is WWF In Your House, 7 Good Friends, Better Enemies from April 28th, 1996. Like it said, Omaha, Nebraska. The Civic Auditorium in Omaha, Nebraska, to be exact. With how many people do you think are on hand here, Travis?
5,200.
9,563.
Okay.
Technically, it was a sellout with 8,273 people paying to get in, with a worth an amount of $120,668.
That was a decent turnout.
Yes, it had a pay-per-view buy rate of 0.65, which what does that equate to, Travis?
240,000.
150,000.
Okay.
How much do you think these pay-per-views cost?
$15.
$14.95. What do you think the overall the not profit but I guess income, or what we call it, gross margin?
How much money do they make?
Yeah.
150,000, $14.99. I'm gonna go with about $900,000.
$2.2 million.
Okay, I'm bad at math.
$2,242,500 to be exact.
Not bad. So,
yeah, not bad. Not bad for a takeaway for such a shit fucking show.
Really? You didn't like it?
No, I did not.
Okay.
But, I mean.
Fair enough.
I liked some aspects of it. That's about it.
On a scale of 1 to 10, the In Your House setup, what do you think of it?
What do you mean by setup? Like the stage?
The stage. How does that age?
It's like 90s.
20 years later.
It looks real 90s.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah. I don't think it would work today.
No, definitely not.
It's not the worst stage I've ever seen. WCW's had a lot worse.
It's so nostalgic for me. I love the stage
much. It's cool that they come out through the garage.
Like everything, man. Like the In Your House setup, the Winged Eagle, Vince McMahon on play-by-play. This is all my shit. I love it.
Well, Travis, let's get into some backstory on this show. Bret Hart had, for all intents and purposes, gone on hiatus, bearing competing for the German tour that followed, and the couple of Raw segments that were filmed while over there, leaving Shawn Michaels to firmly establish himself as the number one guy. In that time, Raw had smashed the previous best rating by nearly a full rating point on April 8th, scoring 4.7 over the previous best in April of May of last year.
Oh.
Yes, which both drew a 3.9. And this big success was drawn with Nitro with a week off, though. So there was no Nitro to compete with it. So it's a little bit of column A, a little bit from column B.
I also think this might have been Warrior's return to Raw, or debut on Raw, which the fucking crowd went nuts for.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that for sure. Let's see here. That was their best rating since the Monday Night Wars had started. It included memorable angles of Yokozuna being taken in an ambulance by a forklift that after Vader had Vader bombed his leg. Then, like you said, Razor Ramon had been away serving a 6-week suspension, blah, blah, blah. This is after him giving his notice. This is why he's not on the show. So that is everything that you need to know leading up why, you know, some people aren't there, why there's some, you know, lack of build. That gives you a little bit of that backstory as to what's going on. So now, Travis, let's break down the ratings of Raw that led up to this fine, fantastic show. The April 1st rating, which I believe was
Mania, post-Mania. Right?
Yeah, which is Mankind and Bob Holly in their WWF debuts. Sable is in the crowd, and it's her WWF debut as well.
She debuted on Mania.
It's labeled in the Observer as her WWF debut. So I don't know. That's all I can tell you. But they might know. I don't know. What was her debut in Mania?
She was a valet for Hunter for the Warrior match.
Okay, well, fair enough.
And now Mark Marrow and Hunter are fighting over Sable.
Fair enough. But the main event saw Justin Hawk Bradshaw taking on The Undertaker, where Mankind would come in and attack Undertaker, and this would start their two-year feud. Started on April 1st, 1996. They got a 2.2 rating for that cocksucker.
A great segment, though.
On April 8th, we had the Yokozuna versus Vader, where Yoko was hurt and taken out by a forklift. Ultimate Warrior Goldust interview. This was Warrior's first time on Raw. That's the 4.7.
We're going to talk about that interview later on.
Then April 15th, it dropped from 4.7 down to 3.1. And this had the Bret Hart interview showing highlights of him leaving WrestleMania 12 as a goddamn loser. And then April 22nd, 1996, we got a bump back up to 3.3, but we got an IC title match between Savio Vega and Goldust. And the 29th, leading into this show, the lowest since Mania, 2.9, Isaac Yankem versus Ultimate Warrior was maybe the main event.
That would be the main event for the show after this pay-per-view.
Oh, after this pay-per-view.
Yeah.
Okay, well, this is not the only one, so this is one after. Well, this is coming up, and this is considered one of the worst matches of Raw history.
I'm going to watch it then. I can't wait. Kane versus the Ultimate Warrior.
So that's where this is going. And before we get into the actual meat and potatoes of the show, dark matches before this show on the free-for-all, we had Mark Marrow. He wrestled 1-2-3 Kid, who had Ted DiBiase in his corner. What's up with that?
He was a part of the Million Dollar Corporation.
Oh, fair enough. That's why he's got facial hair now. I guess he could afford to get plugs.
He's finally no longer a kid.
Yeah. He's just 1-2-3. The 1-2-3 boy. Let's see here. 1-2-3 Kid was disqualified when Hunter came out and interfered and attacked Marrow. After the event went off the air, we had matches between Savio Vega defeating Steve Austin, Hunter Hearst Helmsley defeating Marrow, and Undertaker defeating Mankind. The dark match between Undertaker and Mankind was included on the WWE Attitude Era Volume 3 unreleased DVD and Blu-ray sets.
Oh,
yes.
Neat.
That's exciting.
Yeah, that's actually kind of cool.
And so, Travis, this brings us into the show. We get a, which is going to be in the intro of the whole episode. But I really liked when they called, like, the voiceover, whoever's doing that voiceover for the show, for the intro, I thought it was just all kinds of nostalgia. But when he called Diesel the rebellious and malcontent.
Vince writes these.
Oh, you're fucking right he does. Because I've never heard malcontent used other than wrestling.
Tyler, JR was doing this exact one on the Raws leading up until the Go Home Raw where they just got this guy to do it instead of JR. It was so funny.
I can see that. And then, of course, we get a plane flying over Omaha, dropping bombs on the city. Perfect Army Men 3D graphics. It's fantastic.
Yes. Nostalgia, more.
Yes,
PlayStation.
More nostalgia. That brings us out to Travis.
A Gaydust sign spotted immediately.
A Gaydust.
Gaydust.
Oh. Forever being... nobody ever said it was a PC era, that's for sure. Because I remember as a kid, we all made those jokes.
Oh, of course.
Before this match, though, we had, obviously we've seen Camp Cornette guys with Clarence Mason come down. Clarence Mason being their lawyer in order to keep Damien. I guess, is this Damien still? Do they still call him Damien the Snake?
They don't call him by name at all.
Either
I think
way,
Damien dies at one point.
Well, Yokozuna does crush one of the snakes.
I think he crushes Damien.
Is it? Okay.
I think so, yeah.
So Clarence Mason is there to keep Damien off of the match because British Bulldog is obviously afraid of him from Germany. And so this leads us to a very comical beginning.
Oh, this was good.
I thought that the first, you know, the match itself was nothing. It really wasn't.
No,
but
it wasn't.
But everything leading up to this, having Owen and Bulldog be the perfect shit-eating heels, where, you know, they Owen locking up with Ahmed.
And Bulldog being the shittiest heel. Just, like, forcing his brother-in-law to get in the ring with Ahmed Johnson at every single turn.
Yes, he wants nothing to do with him. But Roberts pulls out his snake to the chagrin of everybody on the Camp Cornette team. Everybody would go flying outside the ring, aside from Jim Cornette, who would faint in the most comedic fashion.
And then Vince says after he faints, I think he's going to die.
He does think that Jim Cornette is going to die. And then British Bulldog gets on top of him, starts doing CPR compressions. With every compression, fucking Jim Cornette's feet would just pop in the air.
Yeah.
And I almost fucking had a conniption, man. I don't need my wrestling to be ultra realistic if you're going to do this. You know what I mean? Like, I'm more than fine with seeing somebody take the piss out of that.
Cornette in this segment and during the Vader match with the promo he cut post-match.
Yeah.
Cornette was a big highlight of this show.
Cornette's always been a highlight of everything we do, in my opinion.
Absolutely, yeah.
Even today, he was the highlight of the NWA 70th anniversary. So, kudos to you, Jim Cornette. You know, like, you can commentate like no other. Just can't commentate somebody that does flippy shit, I suppose.
No.
They then show footage that you were talking about from Bayreuth, Germany, where Robert started choking Bulldog out with a snake. I'd be afraid of snakes, too, if that's what somebody did to me.
That's a big fucking snake, dude.
It is. I bet you it tastes like garbage, too. So
slimy.
We got Roberts, who goes to cut a promo here. he's backstage, and it's a little bit discombobulated.
I feel like him and Vince are kind of off sync.
Yes.
Like, he can't hear what Vince is saying when Vince says it live.
There's some kind of miscommunication here, and we'll let you guys see for yourself.
Jake, are you there?
Well, let me tell you something. I've always been the kind of man that went downtown. When I went downtown, knowing what I was going after.
Yeah, but
there's a plan A,
Jake,
there's a plan B.
Have you seen what's going on out there? We've got a bunch of people. We got Cornette along with
Let me tell you something. I don't go anywhere blind. I've got something. I'll bring it to you now.
No. Come on, McMahon. Now you got to bring that stupid snake out here.
So this leads up to Roberts fainting Jim Cornette, blah, 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 blah. They hand the cord over. Roberts decides, you know, I'm not reading this. But he trades in his snake, though, for an injury-prone suck-ass named Ahmed Johnson, who the crowd eats up like nobody's business.
Oh, they love him
they
at this point.
Like, if they Jim Cornette went on record saying, like, if he could keep a push without getting injured, he could have been big, like, the next Junkyard Dog kind of deal, and you can see it there.
This guy would have won that WWF championship this era had he not gotten injured so much.
Yeah, without a doubt, because, I mean, look at him. Like, the guy just looked like a brick shithouse.
And you know what? Like, athletically, the guy can pull off some pretty impressive feats.
Yeah.
It's just that he's completely uncoordinated
and
very, very not graceful. He's not graceful at all.
No.
Like, I saw him. Apparently, he was in Big Japan. Big Japan Pro Wrestling in 1995.
Oh.
And I saw him pull off an amazing Tope Suicida. So that's saying that the guy has athletic prowess, but for some reason he decides to act like a spaz who hasn't gotten his Ritalin yet.
Yeah. He hits a super stiff clothesline on Owen Hart. He went too low for the clothesline and takes Owen on the backswing and just drives him down to the mat. Then Owen goes into the corner. Ahmed does these stupid spinning mud hole stomps.
That's my gif. That's my gift for the week.
Oh, my God.
Like, it's amazing. That's why I think he's a spaz, because he's kicking him, and he starts to get out of control, and he spins and starts, like, it's...
We both have funky gifts, because I got the gift of Phineas doing the hog
donkey
stuff.
Kick?
Yes.
Yes!
I've got
yes!
And at least with that, it's gimmick-wise, because he's a fucking pig. Phineas I. Godwin. Pig.
It's pig, yeah.
Right? So
Sunny even
gifts
him something.
Yes, she does. And it's not the clap. That it is not. But either way, Travis, this match goes on and on for, let's see, how long does 13 minutes felt like forever. It felt way longer than 13 minutes. I will say, great heel work from Owen and Davey.
Yeah, yeah. Owen Hart saved the match.
He did. He really did. The baby faces to get the hot tag. Immediately, the exhausted Roberts is tagged back in, which makes no sense. Smith then hits Roberts twice with the Cornette's tennis racket, used as a standing knee lock for a submission. And then that's the match, really.
That fucking leg lock?
Yeah.
Oh, that was such a shitty finish.
Yeah, it really was. And you think, like, just think about this now. Davey Boy is going to be taking on Shawn Michaels at Beware of Dog.
The best worker in the company.
Yes, and this is, you know, how you're building him in such a weak match.
Well, there's also smoke and mirrors because they do show Diana Hart in the crowd.
Yes, yes.
And Tyler, why do they never give Diana Hart a front row seat? Because at SummerSlam 1992, when her husband main evented SummerSlam in Wembley Stadium alongside her brother, she got like a fucking 40 row seat in the front floor. On this show, she's got like a 7 row seat on the floor. Like, why
can't have all those frills getting everybody's way if you're getting up clapping your hands? Nobody can see shit with your wavy frills on your arms.
I guess
those stupid leather cowboy jackets that the Harts demand to wear.
But keep that in mind, Diana Hart,
yes,
is in the building.
Yes, it was not for no reason that this was shown. But again, like, besides for the opening angle of this match was a complete stinker, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, what can you do? They then cut to footage of Mark Merrow interrupting a call of Sable from 123 Kid. Merrow wasn't even in the WWF for a month, and Kid is already trying to steal his girl. Kid looked hot, too. Hot in the face.
He was staring directly into the camera, yeah, and it was very uncomfortable
for me. And yelling.
Yeah.
Mad.
With his, like, peach fuzz, like he just went through puberty.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, at least he's got a tan. At least he has eyebrows.
So. Yeah.
Travis, well, you know what this means? You want to get bizarre? It's time for Goldust taking on the Ultimate Warrior in a WWF Intercontinental title match.
Boy, was this bizarre and strange.
It was.
This entire fucking ordeal.
Did you know who Goldust's new bodyguard was?
No.
His name is Bruiser Mastino, a.k.a. Mike Halleck, a.k.a. Mantar.
That's Mantar, hey?
Yes, that's Mantar.
Okay.
But before the match, they show Goldust and Marlena blowing smoke and glitter in Ultimate Warrior's face, proceeding to Ultimate Warrior freakout.
So, I've got some details about this.
Oh, tell me the details.
Yeah, so on the most highest rated Raw of the Monday Night War era.
Up to that time,
the Ultimate Warrior was being interviewed in the ring. Like, huge crowd reaction. And Goldust interrupted this nonsensical promo, as you could imagine. It's an Ultimate Warrior promo. And Goldust gets a little too close to comfort for Warrior. I mean, I'm guessing his inner homophobe decided to leech out and got visibly upset at Goldust's antics. Because Warrior, after a bunch of innuendos that Goldust dished out, he literally tells him to hold it right there, freak. And then he's like, he talks about what his people does and what his people dish out, and he's doing more homophobic innuendo. And after that, he says, whatever it is, I don't give a shit. Goldust touches him one more time. Warrior gets more upset, and then he says this line like, you want like a hot action movie? That hot action movie is me kicking your ass from beginning to end. And the crowd like erupted like fucking Stone Cold came out.
Is this when he's wearing the baseball hat?
No.
Oh. You remember the photos of Ultimate Warrior cutting a promo in a baseball hat like a fucking.
That was
dude.
When he was on King's Corner.
Maybe, I don't know. I don't fucking know.
King's Court. That would be Jerry Lawler's talk show.
We'll go with that. I have no idea. Let's see. So we get Goldust making his entrance. Warrior comes out, makes his. You know, everybody loves his entrance. It's a fun entrance. But Travis, the first thing that came to my mind was: has the Ultimate Warrior ever slipped off of the apron when doing that running gimmick? Because, man, if he has, I need to see it. And I need to see it pronto because it would change my whole life. It really would. I'm not joking.
It has to have happened at one point.
Right? Especially, like, how coked out and fucking, like, retarded that guy was. Oh, has to have.
He did. There's no word of a lie that he wastes all of his energy. He has consumed in that entrance.
Yes. Oh, easily. That's why he's so fucking gassed. That's why his matches are nothing. Well, I mean, that's part of the reason why his matches are nothing. It's not just that. Warrior ends up grabbing Marlena's cigar. He begins smoking it. Sat in her chair. Puts on Goldust's wig. And Goldust, he just, you know, complained that he was, you know, it was just, it was weird.
Well, he grabs that director's chair. He sits in it.
Yeah.
And he teases them for a long time. The crowd starts to chant faggot. Like, this.
Is that what they were saying?
Yeah. Yeah, dude.
Oh, that's rough.
You're talking about this ain't a PC era?
It's definitely not.
There were at least over 20 to 30 people saying faggot at Goldust.
Good. I mean, at least it's a small percentage of the 9,000 people that were there, I suppose. We were on our way.
Oh, boy.
At least in Omaha. That's actually probably a good ratio for Omaha.
The Cornhuskers.
Yeah, I mean, sorry if you're from Nebraska.
That's what Jerry Lawler and Vince were saying all night. These Cornhuskers sure are excited.
They sure are fucking braces.
Oh, man. And speaking of Goldust's knee, he's actually limping visibly all around the ring. So, of course, he couldn't wrestle this
match. Which I'm sure that's a great deal as to why there's so many smoke and mirrors in this match. And it just sucks because the first match had a bunch of smoke and mirrors. Second match has a bunch of smoke and mirrors. Third match does as well. So, I mean, it's just a shame that this is how it goes down on the show. And that's part of the reason why I just think this show is a stinker.
As we said going into this arc, the WWF is notoriously known for having a bad mid-card and a great main event at this point.
Yeah.
And they hold true to that statement with this show.
It's true. It's true. Let's see. Goldust refuses to get into the ring since he claims Warrior's the one that hurt his knee, even though it was Razor Ramon. Kind of rhymes a little bit. He drags Marlena to the back and into Melee. She loses her cigar. Warrior would then puff on it while sitting in his chair with the wig.
After all that running, he decides to smoke a cigar, and he's actually smoking it.
Yeah, he is, with Vince McMahon claiming that, you know, contrary to belief, Warrior does not smoke. Okay, man, whatever you say. He looks like E.T. with that wig on.
And then he puts on the hat.
It's like,
but that's way after. Because he puts on the hat after he does the whole bodyguard thing later on.
Well, yes, no, but still, we're talking about the wig now. Let's just talk, like, that leathery brown skin and that ugly face of his.
He does look like E.T. And then he gets up on the post and he starts doing his thing with the wig and the hat on. And it's...
Oh, man. It just looks like spaz out E.T. when he's scared drinking Coke.
Yeah, definitely.
Instead of doing the Coke, you got E.T. drinking it because E.T. loves Coke.
A cola.
Coca-Cola, yes, not cocaine. I mean, maybe that's why the government was after him so much. Who knows, man? Who knows? Goldust grabs the mic and says that if the crowd's in a shove, he's going to kiss every last one of them on the mouth.
Leading to the protest earlier.
Yes.
He's threatening people with that kind of shit. Yep.
So it makes sense. To get to the end of the match, Goldust sends Marlena to get his jacket from Warrior. She grabs her cigar. The Warrior puts the jacket on Goldust. It's very civil at this point in time. Goldust takes a seat in his chair, takes off a glove, looks scared as shit until Marlena starts rubbing him down. He starts to get his mojo back, you know. He becomes Goldust, starts biting the air, rubbing his nipples. You know, things gold guys do.
I think the Goldust gimmick is so cool.
I do. I do, too.
Especially
I love
at
it.
This point where it's so offensive.
Yeah, I'm a fan. I'm a fan. Warrior, though, would in turn ask for the cigar back, would begin puffing on it, and then instead of kissing Goldust's hand, he would burn it with the cigar. And Goldust would then walk out and get counted out.
Well, he takes his one bump, and he gets clotheslined while sitting in the chair.
Yes.
No knee pain whatsoever.
No.
Easy bump to take.
Yeah. So it worked for a guy that, you know, you've got Warrior who really can't work very well, and B, you've got Goldust who is injured at the time. So it works.
And Goldust isn't the guy that would have had a good match with Warrior anyway.
No. Especially at this point in time.
Nope.
The crowd, though, at least the crowd got to see some of Warrior's signature moves on Mantar at the end of the match.
And he takes off Mantar's clothes. Why does he take off Mantar's clothes?
Because he wanted to shame the fat, silly guy.
Oh, of course, yeah. Shame the fat guy and the faggot, right?
Exactly.
Sorry. I'm sorry. it just alliteration. It made sense in my head, and I said it. And then it came off really bad.
That's okay. That's
according to Omaha, Nebraska, Gold Dust was that tonight. So
loose bundle sticks. I get it. Dave Meltzer notes that not only was this the worst match of the year candidate, but it was a worst match of the decade candidate, but gave it 3.5 stars. So whatever Dave Meltzer was smoking on April 29th or 28th, 1996, pass some of that San Francisco Kush up here.
Maybe he was just really okay with it after watching the Doomsday Cage match, man.
Maybe, maybe his shit is just all on a... Well, this, in comparison to the tag team match before, it got a star and 3/4. So, what a leap.
There was literally no match.
Exactly.
And it got 3.5...
Yep.
Oh,
yep.
Dave.
You know, you can't. They all can't be fucking perfect ones, you know what I'm saying? We cut to the back, though. Travis, Doc Hendricks makes his debut.
Not Michael Hayes.
Not Michael Hayes, Doc Hendricks. You know, back in the day, I used to get mixed up in Doc Hendricks and in D2, the Mighty Ducks, the Hendricks sports guy.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because it was, I used to just get, I would confuse the two all the time just because of the Hendricks. And that's my cheap plug for one of my favorite movies, Mighty Ducks D2. Yeah, boy.
Yeah, boy.
But in the back, we've got Bulldog, who is outside HBK's locker room, where Doc Hendricks claims that he's furious about something that happened to Diana. Michael's just a floozy.
Apparently, Diana Hart is in HBK's locker room, and of all people blocking Owen Hart and British Bulldog from getting in there, Tony Garea and Dave Hebner.
Yep. The toughest guys in the back, I guess. Don't look like no Doug Dillinger, that's for sure.
No. I don't think they can do a legit unkayfabe knee injury on Bulldog or Owen.
Maybe not. But Travis, we've gone long enough. Let's see this art of commentary. The first ever WWF art of commentary that there ever will be. So, obviously. Sometimes commentators just make you want to hang, shake, or bash your head. Sometimes you just laugh. And by God, this is the art of commentary. It's weird saying that without JR being a part of it. But he's not, so fuck you, JR.
This means you want to get bizarre.
Bob and Mark Merrill had a few things to say to the 1-2-3 kid.
Tell me the truth, do you really think Sable's pretty?
I'd like to hear from Sable myself.
Ugh.
Yes, Bob and Mark Merrill, the kid,
the ultimate warrior, to my knowledge, does not smoke. On the contrary,
if you people don't shut your mouths right now, I am personally going to come out there and kiss each and
not necessarily
every
commentary
one of
about
you. So shut up!
Has no nose.
What?
Vader.
Has no nose. Just pushed in a bit. And maybe pushed in a little bit more after this match.
Sonny, you know she was 20 years old before she found out cars have back seats.
What was that?
What? She was 20 years old before she found out cars had back, had front seats.
All right,
seats.
Never mind.
Front seats. It was front seats, McMahon.
Okay, never mind.
Looking good, Mama. Looking good.
Wow.
Fucking Vince McMahon. He's a savage.
And
that's
King
for sure.
Fucking up his own joke on live
pay-per-view.
Oh, man.
He says it twice, too. Twice. He fucked
front
it up
seats.
Twice.
Front seats.
Fuck. He fucked it up twice. That's... It's a classic art of commentary if I've ever seen one. I feel like we're not going to be left out in the dust with the commentary on this arc here. I don't know how many weird things you get when it's just JR and King. But
JR saying weird shit and King just saying the weirdest shit. Yeah.
You'll never get as weird as JR talking with Skittles, though.
Fruity, fruity, delicious, fruity, by God!
It's fantastic. It is. But this brings us to Travis, the debut and parting of Razor Ramon on our arc. He's taking on Vader, who has made his way from one arc to another. He's just on a different show, but
We missed all of the success he's gotten in WCW.
We missed all of good Vader, and now we're getting shit Vader. Fat piece of shit Vader.
No, Vader doesn't lose his confidence until after SummerSlam.
But he's still not the Vader.
He gets one good match.
Fair with Shawn, isn't it?
With Shawn. Yeah. And then, due to all of the burying, Vader slowly drops down. On the Raws leading up to this, we talked a lot about the Yoko and Vader segment.
Yes.
For the first time on Raw history, I heard at least over 20 shits and fucks.
Really?
Uncensored.
Just like from in the ring.
From Yoko.
Really?
Yokozuna, after getting Vader bombed 3 times on his leg, was just yelling, like holding his leg. Shit! Oh, fuck! Fuck! And then when they dish him out on the forklift and Vader pushes him off the forklift, there's more, like even louder. Shit! Oh, shit, Vader! Fuck! It's amazing. It's actually amazing.
I mean, Japanese people swear too, I guess.
Well, he's Samoan.
I know that, Travis. But it's funny how a guy that's playing a Japanese guy is saying English swear words.
Yeah, right?
You know what I mean? Just because, whatever. I always believed he was Japanese. Like, in the beginning, he fucking...
He looked very Japanese. But once he got bigger and facial hair, yeah.
Yeah, it went away. But Travis, in comparison to the other two matches, this match, in my opinion, was a breath of fresh air.
I didn't mind this match one bit.
I thought this match was perfectly fine. It was slow at times, and you can equate it to boring, but I mean, it is a 1996 mid-card match with Razor Ramon. So... Don't expect it to be super exciting, but the end of the match is fucking killer.
Razor kind of worked his butt off a bit.
He did some top rope moves.
He took a lot of bumps.
He did take a lot of bumps. It was a good way going out. Yeah, he did. He did the job.
There was one point where Vader dropped him pretty hard, and he set up for a Vader bomb, and the look in Scott Hall's face was like, I'm going to shit in your fucking bag.
Like, I'm done after tonight, motherfucker.
Yeah, like, oh, he must have, like, gassed the shit out of Razor Ramon at one point.
Oh, probably. Cornette, he distracts Vader. Vader then cheap shots him after spending what felt like 5 minutes stalling outside. That's where, you know, it got a little boring. It was just the stalling that they did outside. But like I said, you know, there was just a lot of brawling. You know what I mean? Because it's Vader. You got a couple of Vader bombs. You know, you got teases to Razor's edges that wouldn't come through because Vader's too big for Razor to do the Razor's edge. And, you know, like the match itself had good near falls, especially towards the end of the match. That really kept you into the match. Vince McMahon's calling did make you believe that the match was going to be over.
There was a lot of hard right hands from Razor Ramon that Vince said.
Yeah. And good psychology as well. Yeah. I thought this match did tell a good story. It kept me into it. It definitely kept me into it compared to the other two.
Watching Razor Ramon be the David to Vader's Goliath was very interesting.
Considering Razor's the bigger of the two.
Razor is a fucking tower of a man. Yeah. Like, it's so weird seeing a guy that big be... Yeah, someone else's foil like that.
Cool. No, I agree. Cool. I agree. It is a little bit of an odd sentiment to take in there, and it probably does take a little while for it to click. I don't know, but like, what big guy do you put up against Razor Ramon to have? You know what I mean? Diesel's the only one, or Undertaker.
At this point, everyone's kind of Razor's height until he goes to WCW to face the Giant, if he ever does.
I'm sure he faced him at some point in time for a television title or some shit.
Everyone fucking wrestles everybody in WCW.
Yeah. Vader, he would go up for a Vader bomb. Razor turns it into a Razor's Edge, which he couldn't complete because Vader was just too goddamn fat. Vader then goes for a top rope Vader bomb, but he gets put on Razor's shoulders. He slams onto the mat, but, you know, it's not really a
Razor. It's an electric chair drop.
Well, okay. I didn't know if electric chair drop was one where he's on the shoulders and goes face first, or if it was the back one. So I didn't really want to call it an electric chair drop, but thank you for that boost of confidence.
I don't know if it's electric chair drop. It might just be the electric chair, and the drop would be the face first one. Who knows?
I get you, but you got the gist. Razor would then go for another Razor's Edge, but Vader flipped out of it and gave him a hip drop for the win.
He sat on him.
Yeah. He gave him a kind of like a monkey flip, and then She did a kind of like a bonsai drop just from footing position.
What I don't understand is that, okay, I feel like Vader winning in this way makes Razor look worse than if Vader won with a power bomb or a moonsault or a Vader bomb, you know? Because he won with a very short way of winning.
Yeah.
Like, if he won with a big move, doesn't that make Razor look better that he didn't have to win by such a shitty, like, dumb way?
Yeah, but I mean, at the same time, they're not looking to keep Razor looking strong either, right?
Oh, yeah, I guess you can look at that too, because is going to WCW.
But at the same time, I mean,
Diesel went out looking fucking fantastic.
Yeah, that whole match was fantastic.
Nash's best match ever.
I'm glad you said it, because it's my sentiment as well.
I can't recall the two matches he had with Brett from Survivor Series and Royal Rumble.
There's no way they're better than this.
Or the Mania 11 match with Shawn, but this match was
fantastic,
incredible.
It was. It really was. And the fact this was given a 3.25 stars, the fact that this was less than the Goldust match,
Razor and Vader match?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fucking stupid.
But I would go with that's my second favorite match on the show. For sure. Doc Hendricks comes running down the ringside to meet Vader and Cornette on the outside of the ring before, you know, Vader gets winded walking up to the back and can't talk, and Cornette starts sweating and is no good on the camera. So let's take a look and see what Doc Hendricks, a.k.a. Michael Hayes, has to say. I lost his name for a second. Fever Dreams.
Excuse me, gentlemen. Great victory there. A tremendous matchup. I've got some news for you.
Better think it's a great victory.
I just spoke with President Gorilla Monsoon, and he said, subject to you winning this match, which you did, that you guys will be on the next In Your House on May 26th.
And we should be.
And he's chosen your opponent.
Who?
Will be the 650-pound mammoth Yokozuna.
What? Yokozuna?
What?
Wait a minute. It can't be Yokozuna. He's out. He's hurt. It can't be Yokozuna. He can't wrestle.
He said that he was ready and he couldn't wait any longer.
Well, let me tell you something, Yokozuna. You made a bad mistake. You're stepping into the danger zone next. Razor Ramon, by the time we got finished with him, he looked like Margo Kidder. And Yokozuna, first it was your leg. Next time it's going to be your whole body. You want it to be that way? You're stepping into the Vader zone.
Oh, man, maybe we can have an episode on the new Jordan Peele version of Twilight Zone called the Vader Zone.
The Vader Zone, where they meet in heaven.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah. Count me in.
Man, could you imagine if Yokozuna ended up living like 19 years longer
to get that
Saudi payday?
I can't.
Because that was one of the reasons why they wanted WWF to come. Yokozuna, the Ultimate Warrior, Hulk Hogan, and what was it, The Undertaker?
Did you mention Ultimate Warrior?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. it's weird. like they should have just hired Fallabaugh.
From Impact, right?
They just had him come in because he's better than Yokozuna ever was. I fucking love Fallabaugh. I think he's fantastic. Like him and KM going around getting makeovers and stuff now. Oh, man. And then trying to bag Scarlett Bordeaux at the same time. And the fact that all he says is ba. So like KM will have a conversation with him and he responds with only in ba, ba.
So he's like Hodor from Game of Thrones.
He'd be like, hey, Follow, you like that shirt? Ba, ba. Follow, what do you want to eat? Bah, bah. Oh, yeah, okay, I'll like go for a fucking Chinese food, too. Come on, let's go. It's fucking fantastic.
Impact's on the up.
It is. It has some upside to it. I agree. What was not on the up, though, was the next match for the WWF Tag Team.
Can we talk about the Toddster selling merch?
Oh, you mean those shitty fucking hat and shirt combos?
Polo shirts and baseball hats.
Oh, barely a baseball hat. It was such a garbage hat. If somebody gave me that hat, I'd spit in their face.
Fully licensed, embroidered Ultimate Warrior logo.
Yes, and he had to explain that if you bought the Warrior hat, you got the Warrior shirt. If you bought the whatever hat, you got.
And he didn't describe the shirt as a polo shirt. He's like, this is a t-shirt here in sports style.
Yes, a sports shirt or whatever. Fuck. No fat man should ever wear a polo shirt. It's not right.
Nobody should wear a polo shirt.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, there's instances where it's just easier to wear a polo shirt. Like if you work in a place where you're supposed to wear a collar,
it's like,
I'll just go with the polo. Fuck it. But what you can't fuck is the Godwins because they're A, dirty and shit, dirty as shit, and have probably fucked pigs and got all kinds of diseases. So.
I just realized Henry O. Godwin's hog.
Yeah, you never know, it's pig and hog, yeah.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, no, it's very clever in those respects. Taking on Skip and Zip with Sonny, the Body Donnas.
Oh, man. God damn, Sonny in 1996.
Oh, she's fantastic.
I'd get chlamydia from that.
I would too. But what I will say, Tom Pritchard, okay tag partner.
Tom Pritchard, yep. Very underrated for a worker.
I agree. I was
working with a guy that is as good as Chris Candido. He held up very well.
Yeah, he held up for sure. I thought it was fun.
Candido's a very good worker.
Oh, yeah.
Very good wrestler.
And Candido was the obvious highlight of this match.
And Phineas.
For different reasons. For Phineas, for character work.
And his bizarre ring work.
Yeah, the donkey kicks. That's a little weird. That is. The fact that the fucking guy gets on his hands and knees and then starts bucking himself around wildly, kicking at guys.
And the first time it didn't hit.
It goes horribly wrong.
Nobody.
It hits nobody. And then Chris Candido has to save himself from not getting A, kicked in the face, and B, from actually just being able to take that bump.
But Tyler, would you rather see this or Henry O. Godwin as a mid-card singles wrestler last year during the In Your House stint where he had a hog pen match with Triple H?
I'd rather Southern Comfort or Southern Gentleman, whatever the fuck their name was. What were they called when they dressed up in suits and ties?
Southern Justice?
Southern Justice is the name.
No, they were awful at that point. Like, honestly, trust me, you'd rather take the Godwins any day over boring-ass Southern Justice with really boring Jeff Jarrett.
No, I get that. I get that. And, you know, the whole fact that Hillbilly Jim is with them as well, really, I don't know, I've always had a soft place in my heart for Hillbilly
and
Jim.
And then, like, they didn't show him on the pay-per-view, but they got a dog called Old Blue.
Yeah,
ringside. And, like, on the Raw that I reviewed on Patreon, Old Blue actually chases Sonny out of the arena. Like, Hillbilly Jim sicks the dog on Sonny, and the dog runs after Sonny. It's amazing. Amazing.
So, this is a rehash of a match that they had at WrestleMania 12, where, you know, basically, you know, it was along the same lines. There wasn't much difference. Like I said, they're pushing an angle where Phineas Godwin is infatuated with Sonny, and Sonny uses it in ways to get an advantage and give her team the win. And I really like to adding the Phineas's character. His wrist tape is duct tape. And
yeah,
that's fantastic.
Really
is.
I thought the Godwins would have been absolute shit.
Yeah, but they were fun. It was fun. It's not a good match, but it's fun.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Let's see here. It didn't take long for gimmicks to really come into play in this match, though. The slop bucket gets hinted real easy. The Donnas, they try to do the whole switcheroo, even though not being twins and looking nothing alike. Tom Pritchard being about 20 years older than Chris Candido, or at least looking it. But, you know, the whole match, is like I said, is based around Sonny and Phineas, and Sonny trying to get to the weaker mind of the two. She goes backstage, she finds an autographed photo of herself framed, and she runs over and she gives it to Phineas for whack-off material, obviously.
It's autographed, yeah. To Pig, with all the love, Sonny.
With all the love and all the bacon. But who puts it in the slop? Is it Hillbilly Jim that decides to put this picture in the slop?
I thought it was Henry O.
Is it Henry O?
Who is called O. Henry on Raw's.
Why?
Vince McMahon's either trying to be funny or he's fucking up.
Fair enough. I mean, it does sound really stupid. It really does. But she would give him the photo. This would allow, I think, Candido to roll up Henry.
No, it was
Pritchard? That rolled up? I'll never be able to. I don't know.
Skip is Candido. Zip is Pritchard. Yeah.
Okay. So Zip rolls up Henry and they get the win. Phineas is then told to leave the photo. He brushes it off, puts it in his overalls, right as close to his member as he can, and he walks away.
third bad finish in a row.
Yeah, it is. It was. Like I said, the match is nothing great. There are some great comedy and some great stories being told in these matches, and they're fun. But the stuff is, it's just not the wrestling that we're used to nowadays.
And it's going from WCW style to WWF style.
Yes, which is not strong on the wrestling anyways.
No, and no. WCW is forever known for having a strong mid-card. And even back in the 90s, like 1990 when we were reviewing those shows, we'd get glimpses of really, really good matches.
Yeah, you would.
Midnight
you really
Express.
Yeah. Oh, well, it was always the Midnight Express and the Rock and Roll Express. Those matches were the greatest that we got anyways.
Yeah.
Some of the Ric Flair matches were good. A lot of them were abysmal, though, because of his opponents.
It's bad timing.
Yeah, bad timing is essentially what it is. Terry Funk was pretty good. But other than that, you can go suck a donkey dick. Travis, they had a very long promo on the Diesel and Michaels feud. It was literally 3 minutes long.
It's the third time I've watched this.
Really? They were playing that over and over and over again.
It main evented Raw to go home.
Fair enough.
With an interview from Germany with Diesel.
Good. Well, right now, after they air that promo, they do a dual previously
from
aired
Free For All,
From Free For All. And so let's listen to what the former best friends, now better enemies, have to say.
You know, Big Daddy Cool Diesel and Heartbreak Kid Shawn Michaels, their friendship has reached the end of the road. And I promised the Click a party tonight, and it ain't gonna happen till the chin music is cued and myself and the Click are dancing all over Big Daddy Cool's face. And believe me, one way or another, it's gonna happen.
Anything, I'll tell you one thing. Hey, Vince, you gonna be out there tonight? Somewhere tonight, I got a little something for you, all right? I don't know when it's going to happen, but I got a little something for you tonight. I got something for all you little fans out there, you little clicksters. Because you know what? It's live, and when it's live, I'm digging it the most.
All right, there you hear it. Vince, beware, and back to you.
This is the lonely voice of JR. It's like the only time we get to hear it.
It's the only time we hear JR.
And it's from a previously taped free-for-all segment. So.
It's too Southern.
Yeah, fuck. So, the promo video before this match sells Diesel as a lazy piece of shit on his last night with the company, which, you know, they're not technically lying, but
it's technically, like, the most effort Nash has put into any match.
Well, yes, but like, he's notorious for not having the greatest of matches.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. This night being an exception in this Falls Count Anywhere no holds barred match.
Tyler, in the build up to this pay per view, Nash in that Germany interview says that year he held the WWF Championship was the worst year of his career.
Yeah, because he had to work so much. Is essentially what they said.
Like, what the?
It's like, oh yeah, fair enough, man. Fair enough. I mean, fuck it, right? But they play up the rebellious nature of Diesel. With Diesel throwing his vest at Vince McMahon, that leather studded vest.
And I don't think that's what he alluded to, that sometime, somewhere, you're going to get something tonight that he said to Vince.
Well, I'm pretty sure that's the Vachon part.
I thought it would have been the table.
I don't know. I don't know. Could have been any of them.
Yeah.
Really. Could have been either or. Maybe it's all of it. Who knows, man? Who fucking knows? But we had some good moves. Some good sequences, some good spots with HBK hitting a moonsault to the outside. Diesel then steals Hugo's boot from under the announce table. Or, Diesel doesn't steal it.
Shawn Michaels steals a boot from the Spanish announce table.
Yes, and then
he
jumps
goes
off
up top,
the top rope, smacks him over the head with the boot. It's not a load of boot, so you can just fuck off.
I love Diesel in the corner when he yells at Vince, and then he goes over to the other corner and yells at Jose Lothario and just says, "Hey, old man, this is what we do in the 90s.
Oh, man, Diesel is never good when it came to just ad-libs.
No.
Never. Diesel would unwrap tape from his wrist and choke out Earl Hebner. He then steals Earl's belt and starts whipping Shawn Michaels, then hangs Shawn Michaels by the belt from the top rope.
Oh,
which
God.
Was fantastic.
Yeah, it was great.
I love this kind
this
of shit.
This is kind
man.
Of shit that Kevin Nash should have been doing to get himself over.
Yeah, exactly. Too bad it just took until now for him to do it. You would continue an onslaught by having Diesel jackknife powerbomb HBK through the announce table.
all the monitors, all interfaces, all wires, all still on there.
All still there. They all get intermixed with each other. HBK would spray a fire extinguisher into the eyes of Diesel and would start making his baby face comeback.
Highlight of the match, Shawn Michaels grabs that chair.
And takes King's headset with him.
And the interface.
Yeah.
So he's like swinging the chair, and every time he swings the chair at Diesel, the headset and the interface clock him in the back or the back of the head. And he's getting so upset with it because every time he finishes one, he tries to rip these cables out. It never works.
Yeah. It would be the end of the good sounding commentary too, because from there they would have microphones.
Standing up.
Because, I mean, King didn't have nothing. Like, there was no announcers for about a good 2 minutes just trying to figure out how to go about this.
Really awkward.
It was, but, I mean, you're selling it. I can understand it being without commentary for a couple minutes if it's to sell something like that. You know what I mean? Because in a real-world situation, that's what would happen more than likely. You wouldn't be able to keep on talking after having your fucking table wrecked.
No.
Right? So. HBK would make some wild swings with a chair. It wouldn't be long, though, before it would turn around. HBK would then reverse a jackknife powerbomb, hit a picture-perfect elbow drop, and he would start to cue the band. But Diesel would hit a well-timed clothesline. But both men are exhausted and can't capitalize.
A great reversal there, too, where he grabbed the boot and then hit the clothesline.
Yep.
You see that clip a lot. If you want to ever remember anything from the New Generation era, that's... for some reason, one of the more well-known clips is that super kick reversal.
Yeah.
Which I know it's very, very small and minute,
it's us. I just can't picture it, seeing it outside of here. But, I mean, if I'd seen the promo videos, I probably would remember it. But the two would brawl outside. Diesel would attack Maurice Vachon and steal his prosthetic leg. But before he could clobber HBK with it, he would get punched in the dick and then hit in the head himself with the fake leg.
Well, it was alluding back to earlier when Sean first grabbed the chair and he held it up and he was taunting Diesel with it, and Diesel low-blowed him.
Yes.
The same exact way that Diesel, you know, just got it.
Yeah. And HBK then tunes the band again, hits a sweet chin music, and gets the win. It was a great match. Diesel, though, pulled an Austin Aries and rolls out of the ring immediately and walks away.
Did he?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, whatever.
Against his best friend, too.
Yeah. 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 As soon as the pin is over, man, you just see him just roll out of the ring.
Fair enough. Yeah. But you know what? That was probably one of the best Nash matches I ever watched.
Oh, without a doubt. And he would never touch it, I don't think, in WCW.
So, no. No.
No, like, there's no reason for him to want to.
And plus, he's motivated because he's wrestling against Shawn Michaels, one of his best friends.
Yeah.
When Shawn won that title, Brett wrote in his book that it's notoriously known that before he won the title, he was like, oh, I'm so excited. I'm going to have programs with Nash. I'm going to have programs with Hall, Kid, Hunter. It's going to be great.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I know. That would go away real fast. So while we're on the topic, Hall gave his notice February 21st of 1996. Let's see. Kevin Nash gave his notice on March 5th, and it just all leads to this. They would show up in WCW, I would imagine, sometime in May.
Scott Hall shows up first, and then Nash shows up like two or three weeks later.
And then this leads to Bash at the Beach in June, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, we won't be seeing
Bash at the Beach in July.
Is it July? Okay,
Great American Bash is June, I think.
So we'll probably get them in June then. So we got our next month. Won't have...
Slamboree will be the last WCW pay-per-view.
Probably. Hopefully.
I mean, without anything noteworthy happening on the show.
Yeah. We'll go over that card in a second here. But let's go over the aftermath of Good Friends, Better Enemies. It was notable for being obviously the last televised event of Diesel and Razor Ramon until 2002. They would go on to form, obviously, the NWO. But prior to leaving the WWF, Nash and Hall, alongside with Shawn Michaels and Hunter Hearst Helmsley, were involved in a controversial incident on May 19th, 1996, also the same night as Slamboree. During
the
a live
call.
Yeah. during a live event in Madison Square Garden that we know as the MSG Curtain Call. So that's to come. You know, so they stuck around till May to do their contractable, you know, obligations, but they weren't on television anymore.
That's a really interesting trivia bit.
Yeah.
That it happened the same night as Slamboree 96.
At least I'm pretty sure it did. Almost positive.
Well, if it was May 19th, that's what you said earlier.
Yeah. And then Shawn Michaels immediately began a heated rivalry with British Bulldog. As a result, the match made for the following month In Your House between the two. Goldust began a feud with The Undertaker, leading up to a casket match in an In Your House. Vader then restarts a feud with Yokozuna. And that's basically where we're going there. The Godwins would win the tag team championships as well from the Body Donnas in a rematch on May 19th.
And that Beware a Dog show is going to be a very, very badly lucked show. There's a lot of bad luck surrounding that show.
Oh.
Power outages, Tyler.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's so that show.
There's going to be a lot of news for that, I'm going to assume.
Yes. I remember having a WWF magazine that told that whole story.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Nice.
I remember that vividly. So that is the aftermath leading us into Beware of Dog, which will be coming out in about a month. But coming out in 2 weeks is WCW Slamboree 1996. And instead of going over every match, because holy fucking
far too many. So it's the Lord of the Ring tournament.
Which obviously mishmashes tag teams, because none of it makes sense. Because you've got the team of Booker T and Animal, Lex Luger and Hawk, Benoit and Kevin Sullivan, The Public Enemy, Rick Steiner and the Booty Man, Sergeant Craig Pittman and Scott Steiner, Jim Duggan and VK Wall Street, The Blue Bloods, Alex Wright and Disco Inferno, Earl Robert Eaton and Dick Slater, Diamond Dallas Page, The Barbarian, Hugh Morris and Ming, Big Bubba and Stevie Ray, Fire and Ice, which is Ice Train and Scott Norton, and Arn Anderson with Eddie Guerrero, and Randy Savage and Ric Flair.
Ooh.
That's the tag teams.
Yeah, that sounds like you could get some sparse good things out of it, even though everything's going to be really short.
Yeah.
The one match I'm looking for on this show is Dean Malenko taking on Brad Armstrong.
That should be really fun.
That should be the one definite good match on this show.
I'm also keeping the hopes up for Conan and Jushin Liger.
Yes, yes.
But the rest of it.
Well, Sting versus the Giant for the World Heavyweight Championship main events.
And then the finals of the tournament is a battle royal between Diamond Dallas Page, Dick Slater, Earl Robert Eaton. The finals for the battle for the tag tournament is a battle royal with no teams.
Okay.
So I don't know.
Well, we'll have to hash this out in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's weird. I guess Giant, after winning against Loch Ness for that number one contendership match, he actually won the title the night after Uncensored.
I guess so.
I'm guessing he must have. So.
He must have, yeah. He had to.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think the show has the ability to be somewhat entertaining. Hopefully it's not as bad as Starrcade 90, because I don't know if I can do that again. Because that was
bad.
We just left that, and now we're going right into another one. God damn, guys.
But it's not going to be consistently like this.
No, no.
But over the month of April, I mean, Uncensored was in March.
Yes.
But for the WCW and WWF offering, which one won?
WWF, easily. Easily, this show was much better.
I'm going to agree with you.
You take the ups, you know, like one of the major ups being the length of time that the In Your House show was compared to the Uncensored.
So easy to watch.
Yeah. More good matches as a whole. Like, HBK and Diesel is better than anything that was on Uncensored.
Yeah.
It was, and I would say it was better than Regal and Belfast Bruiser.
Easily.
The Belfast Bruiser and Regal being the only thing that comes up to anything on this WWF show.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, easy there. You know, what would you say would be a score?
A score of the month?
Of this show.
Of this show. Well, obviously, Sean and Diesel were fantastic. Yeah. But I'm also going to say, like, the amount of reliance on young talent without...
I get you.
Being... Yeah. Without them realizing that, you know, we're in turmoil right now. We're doing horrible business as to what we used to do, but we're still going to continue to promote young talent. And mind you, Ultimate Warrior's there, but that's the only nostalgic act in the entire company.
Yeah.
And then you go over to WCW, and it's the Road Warriors.
Hogan,
I'm not
Macho
even going to list
Ric Flair.
Too many people.
Yeah.
The WWF relying on young talent and giving all of them chances at this point. Huge score.
I agree. I gotta agree with all your scores. You know what I mean? There's nothing else you can really pinpoint for a score. For a bore, I would have to say, you know, the Ultimate Warrior, that whole surrounding. But I mean, it's definitely not due to character work surrounding the Ultimate Warrior, because Goldust's character is solid. It's sound. It's fun. But the Ultimate Warrior is, just, in my opinion, just very boring. And you got a bore to say before we go into the sores?
A bore? Let's see here. It's hard to, once again, have to be unanimous and agree with you on the Ultimate Warrior being a bore.
Yeah.
It's a short show. There's not a lot to be bored of because it's well-paced.
Yeah, I agree. And then you've got the sores would be a point I made earlier, that this version of WWF is making fun of future WWF. That's a sore point.
I agree. But my sore would definitely be the inconsistency of finishes.
Yeah.
And deciding, okay, these people are going to pay $14.99 for a show. It's not a lot of money.
It's not.
But... you're going to get them to pay this money to see a show with 3 out of 4 matches being a fuck finish.
Yeah.
Or at least like something where you don't get something decisive. In my opinion, that makes me sour, leaving a show, watching something that never had anything decisive out of it. So, yeah.
Yeah. No, it's a good points all around, I feel. And with that, let's close out the show by, you can go on Twitter. You can follow us there at the Federation. You retweet our pinned tweet, you'll get a shout out on the show. You can go on Facebook, just type in the Federation Podcast. T-shirts at whatamaneuver.net. We have 3 different styles to choose from, blah, blah, blah. You can do them in sweaters and whatever. Just go there. You go to thefederation.com, hit store, it'll bring you right to the webpage. It's easy peasy. Same thing with the Patreon. If you want to subscribe to us on Patreon, just go to thefederation.com, click on the Patreon button, boom, you're there. And you can join guys like Ty Loney, Dallas Ellsworth, Chris Savage, Christopher Spaulding, and Viva Lajady.
And there's more content than ever.
More, so. Yeah, it's true. It's true. And I'm sure we're probably going to aim for next week in getting a Kobashi Misawa Chronicles up.
Yeah.
And, you know, we'll get that all going. And you can listen to me on SCL every Friday or Saturday talking about the week of wrestling. And, Travis, you can follow. What is your Twitter handle if you want to see Travis tweet?
My Twitter handle is FudgingUp333. I tweet frequently. And yeah, as Tyler said, subscribe to the Patreon. You can hear me on a lot of episodes
Travis
on there.
Travis is mainly the Patreon.
So yeah, if you want to hear more from me, because you know where to find Tyler, but if you want to hear more from me, then just donate $5.
Travis has made it. You got to pay to hear his voice.
I've got a busy schedule, so when you want to hear me, you got to hear me in short, fast spurts.
Sounds like the way I beat off. But Travis, with that being said, keep on rocking the free roll, Dan.
Do.
Clan robes, sexist, racist, homophobes, Aryan nations and hammer skins. You can wear my nuts on your Nazi chins. I love a man in uniform.
And just what exactly are the great historical accomplishments of your race that make you proud to be white? capitalism, slavery, genocide, sitcoms. This is your fucking white history, my friend. So why don't we start making the history worth being about and start fighting the real fucking enemy?
Swastikas and Klan robes. Sexist, racist, homophobes. This one's for the master race. My brown power ass in your white power face. Kill them all and let a Norse god sort them out.